From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in Oregon on a trail where a couple was getting to know their adopted home state by way of a bicycle, biking and camping across the state with their dog, Sora, in tow. Jen and Dave experienced Oregon in ways that they couldn't in a car. Here's Jen reporting on some of their travels. Quote, from Eugene, we made our way to Rainbow Bridge, a blip of a town, servicing the Mackenzie River Recreational Area, a 26-mile trail famous for a sapphire blue pool and mountain biking. In preparation for our ride up the Mackenzie Pass Scenic Byway, we picked up provisions and devoured veggie burgers before turning in for the night at Belknap Hot Springs, where we'd soak our tired bodies in the thermal pools, end quote. Does this sound like something you'd want to do? Well, Jen and Dave are among the increasing number of people taking advantage of bike tours or cycling adventures, organized trips throughout the United States and the world. It's a different way to experience travel, as riders will tell you. Jen and Dave experience nature. Other riders will bike from hotel to hotel, getting their physical activity in during the day and enjoying meals with their fellow riders before turning into a warm bed at night. They say these cycling tours, where beginning to advanced riders are unplugged and outside, are unlike any other trip they've experienced. And health professionals say this is a good thing because there aren't a whole lot of trends going in the outside physical activity direction. A 2018 report from the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics found only 23% of Americans are meeting federal standards set back in 2008 for time spent exercising. This hour, we explore the rise in adventure bicycling with some stories from the road, some remote locales, and Chris Thomas is usually here talking speech issues of the law with Nixon Peabody, but today, you're just a cycling enthusiast. No notes.
Not a single note, not a single case in front of me, but what I do want to do, Evan, is to tell our audience that, you know, the next hour is going to be about joy, freedom, and fitness, and having fun. I was listening to the last hour, and that's a trigger warning. There are some people that don't want to have joy in their lives and fun and freedom.
Oh, you're offering a trigger warning for the next hour.
Exactly right. If you're opposed to freedom and joy, turn it off now. But if you are looking for freedom and joy in your life, stay tuned.
All right. I see what you did there. So Chris is here, and hello to Jenny Sullivan, Director of Travel Initiatives for Adventure Cycling, in town for an event tonight, which we'll tell you about in a moment. In town from, I mean, you're always all over the place, but where is home for you?
So we're, our national headquarters are based in Missoula, Montana.
Missoula, Montana.
Yes.
I would say far from home, but you've probably been a lot farther from home.
Oh, yeah.
All around the world. But
New Zealand and Europe and all sorts of places on my bike.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Steve Powell, tour leader for Adventure Cycling, from not so far from here, a little farther, Ithaca.
That's right, down in the Finger Lakes region. And I lead bike tours for Adventure Cycling up here, Erie Canal from New York, and then other parts of the country, too, from Florida to California and parts in between.
Well, it's great to have you. Thank you for taking the time to be here. Tonight, Full Moon Vista is the location for an event from 7 to 9. Refreshments that will be there. The program officially starts at 7:30, and a chance for you to learn about trips to, what, maybe 40 cities this year or so? What's going on tonight?
Oh, we have over 100 bike tours, but we also offer do-it-yourself rides through our maps and a whole bunch of other experiences that you can participate in and experience your first time bike tour, or if you're experienced on a bicycle and you want to bike across the country, you can do that too. So we're going to talk about all the kinds of things that we offer at Adventure Cycling.
Well, they've got the floor this hour, so I will only say that the good news is, according to various news publications, this is a field that's slowly growing in a country where we're becoming more sedentary. So that's good. So Jenny's company is not the only one doing it, but you're going to be hearing from Adventure Cycling, adventurecycling.org, if you want to jump online. You got, what, 52,000 members?
Yes, that's correct.
52,000 members, 48,608 miles of official routes you've done.
That's right.
That's a lot. And groups of cyclists, when you go on these, are how big? How small to how big?
Well, it depends on the kind of tour you sign up for. So typically our self-contained tours, which are kind of the heart and soul of our organization and might be quite of an epic adventure, those are not going to be any bigger than 15 people, all the way up to fully supported bicycle tours where you don't have to carry any gear. You're everything's catered. You don't have to think about the meals and any of that stuff. And that can be up to, I don't know, Steve, 70 people, 80 people.
Yeah, and sometimes even perhaps touching 80 or 90.
Mm-hmm. So there's just everything in between. If you want to do an epic but you don't want to carry any gear, we have van-supported trips. And then we have these entry-level trips, which are just weekends. And they're usually on very low-stress routes is what we call them. So bicycle trails and bike boulevards and things like that, where you just get away for a weekend and hop on your bike and go. And it's just really fun. And it's all about that joy Chris was talking about.
Well, Chris, I want to ask you about some of the trips you've taken. In fact, your most recent was for how long?
Let's see. I was on the road for 21 days.
21 days. And you were where? What was the route?
Well, I started near Tallahassee, Florida, rode through the middle of the panhandle of Florida, then down to Pensacola, along the Gulf Coast, and then headed up the Mississippi to a little town called Natchez, which was made famous by Mark Twain back in the riverboat days. And, you know, an amazingly picturesque little town. And that is the start of a world-famous parkway called the Natchez Trace. And the Natchez Trace is a pathway that became a postal route designated by Thomas Jefferson as such, and ultimately the roadway that it is now that connected Nashville to Natchez and the Mississippi River. Unbelievable history along the trace, including the location where Meriwether Lewis of Lewis and Clark fame spent his last night when he committed suicide along the trace. And that's one sad piece of history of the trace, but there are many uplifting historical events that took place along there as well. But absolutely spectacular riding the whole way. And I used Adventure Cycling's maps, which I have done for the last several years of touring that I've done.
Were you with a group?
No, all alone. And I was camping for the most part.
That sounds really smart.
It was great. And this is the thing I want the listeners to know about is that, you know, here I am. I'm a 54-year-old guy, okay? I'm not like the peak of fitness. You know, I'm reasonably fit, but, you know, I've got some adventure in me. You know, I can get on a bike and move my legs around. I haven't forgotten how to do that. But these maps make it so amazingly accessible because they tell you what you're going to be coming to every step of the way. What amenities are along the way, what camping, what hotels. There's never any guesswork. And the real beauty thing of them is that they don't take you on major roadways. I have an open Facebook page if people want to go see my postings about it. You can see some of the pictures that I've posted of the roadways that the Adventure Cycling maps put me onto. And Evan, if you've ever been down south, you know the driving down there is absolutely bonkers. The roads are narrow. They have no shoulders. The pickup trucks are super wide, and everybody's going a million miles an hour, and they're not particularly looking out for cyclists. The routes that Adventure Cycling put me on had me literally on roads where if I was passed by two or three cars in a half an hour, that was a lot. And there is nothing better. It just brings you back to your youth. You're a lot closer to it than I am, but it brings you back to your youth on days when you were riding your bike, you know, feeling free, feeling the air through your hair, seeing things that you had never seen before, and doing so in almost complete safety because you're on relatively uninhabited roads. People, don't do a bike trip unless you're doing it with maps that are designed for cyclists by cyclists, as these are.
Well, here's what I don't get, though. You were alone with this?
Yes.
But you use the Adventure Cycling maps?
Yep.
So that's not a very good customer. You're just stealing their maps without paying for their services.
Well, I paid for the maps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So a way for you all to kind of think about Adventure Cycling is that it's the AAA for bicyclists. You know, so you know how in I think the AAA office is in Pittsburgh, and there's probably one in Greece and Gates and Penfield. You know, and if you want to do a road trip, you call them up. I don't even know if they do those triptychs anymore, but they'll set up the maps.
I remember the triptychs. We used to drive south 10, 12 hours as a family and triptych it the whole way, man.
And that's exactly what these are. You know, they're made out of sturdy. They're sort of on Tyvek. Material that's completely indestructible. They map out your every mile. This trip that I did was about 1,000 miles. I had one of the adventure cycling maps in front of me the whole time and, you know, didn't miss a single beat the whole way. So if you think about it in that regard, like kind of the AAA for cycling, you'll have an idea for it. And plus there's discounts that come along with it. But I think most importantly, it's the people that come along with it. When, you know, at Adventure Cycling, they have a mapping department, and I saw it with my own two eyes when I was in Missoula, and we can talk about that in a minute. Jenny took me through the offices, and there is a mapping department there, and there were three or four people who were at that very moment on their computers and on their phones communicating with states' departments of transportation, talking with people at different states' departments of transportation about the quality of the roads, you know, what are the busyness of the roads, and setting the routes so that they would be the best experience for cyclists and going through just unbelievable scenery.
How big is your mapping department?
I think we have 5 full-time cartographers. And the thing about our maps is they're always updated because services are constantly dying in these little towns.
What's available? What's open?
Yeah, so we do map updates so you buy a map and then right before you go on tour, you print out the map updates and you have all the most recent information. We also, for those people out there that love technology, you can use our app. It's called Route Navigator app. It's on all the stores. And so you can go with a map and with the app, then it'll tell you if you get off route. You don't have to use up all your battery space because you can download the information. I particularly love the print maps like Chris does because I think having something in your hand is really wonderful. But, you know, we have something there to meet everybody's needs.
Well, and when I come back in my next life, I only have a couple of requests here when I'm reincarnated. I want to, because Chris was joking about my male pattern baldness, talks about wind flowing through the hair. That was a kind of a cheap shot.
That was.
So I'd like to come back with a nice coif like yours.
Okay, good.
And I want one of two jobs. I want to be making maps for your company, because how fun would that be?
Yeah.
Your job is to make the maps, maybe go out and experience or make sure that I would think that's a great job. Or I want to go to Europe and I want to work for a guy by the name of Alistair Sauday, who, you know, in the age of everything's on the internet, he still makes books called Special Places to Stay. He's a Scottish guy. He's got a group of 12 people who travel to bed and breakfasts around Italy and France and Spain and England, and they make a book every 2 or 3 years, Special Places to Stay. Mm. Yeah, it's a hard job.
Yeah.
Go check out these B&Bs in the countryside. You know, somebody has to do it. Go make some maps for us for this adventure cycling company. Somebody has to do it. So a little hair. One of those jobs is what.
Well, you know, hospitality is a big part of bike touring as well. And
actually,
that's how Chris and I met. I was his hospitality host in Missoula, Montana. He had no idea I worked at Adventure Cycling.
None.
Yeah. He showed up on my doorstep, and we started to talk. And
I'm going to be really disappointed if you're getting like big kickbacks for this, because
you
are an evangelist.
No, I'm there. There's no
just the joy of spreading the news.
Right?
With this.
No, it's true. The money goes one way. My membership money goes to Adventure Cycling, and that's it. It doesn't. I don't get any kickback. I just want to share with my Rochester and Western New York based brothers and sisters the joy of cycling.
All right. So tonight, Full Moon Vista, 7 to 9. Learn all about it. It's a chance to kind of hook up with where these trips go, how big they are, where, you know, the from the beginner to the advanced. And I'm going to ask our guests coming up here to kind of share their favorite experiences from the road. But I want to go back to making sure I understand the most recent trip. So 21 days.
Yep, 21 days.
Tell me where at night you were staying on this trip.
Okay, so for 12 of the nights I was camping. I have just a teeny tiny, what they call a bivy bag, weighs about a pound. You can buy it at REI, and all of this equipment is easily accessible at stores like Full Moon Vista or at REI or EMS or online from Adventure Cycling. And
I think there's Bike Zone on Richmond. Anyway, there's a lot.
There's tons of different places. And this is another thing I want to make perfectly clear. This does not have to be a big capital outlay. You know, there are plenty of people who are out there riding and having a great time on beater bikes. As long as the bikes are structurally sound and are well tuned up, they are sufficient. You don't have to go out and buy some $10,000 bike. Don't do it, because it's going to get beat up, you know, on the road anyways. You can, as long, what I would recommend is that people get a relationship with a good bike shop, and the bike shop, those are your experts. They'll hold your hand. They'll tell you what you need. If it's a good bike shop, they're not going to steer you the wrong way. And, you know, if you say to, you know, one of the good bike shops in town, and there's many of them, hey, I'm interested in used, most of them are going to help you out if you form a relationship with them and you do patronize them with, you know, other sorts of work. So, sort of a little digression there, because I think sometimes people think, oh, God, I'm going to have to put out a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
Don't. Don't do it. That's what eBay is for. That's what Craigslist is for. That's what, you know, the various different outlets like that are for. So I slept I camped out for 12 of the nights. Then I spent two rainy nights in hotels, which were just great. And then I had the rest of the evenings with hosts. Kind of like, well, exactly like Jenny was talking about a minute ago. And this is, I think, one of the most amazing things in this story, and that is that there is a huge community of long-distance cyclists around the world and in Rochester who provide hospitality for free to other long-distance cyclists. It's a website. You can go to it right now if you want. It's called warmshowers.org. And in the Rochester area alone, I think there's 20 or 30 active hosts who, when there are riders coming along, especially the Erie Canal, those riders, when they're in Buffalo, will email or text and say, hey, I'm coming through Rochester. Can I stay at your place? And, you know, if Kate and I don't have anything going on, you know, we've got three extra rooms. Yeah, sure, stay at the house. And what ends up happening is we have these great experiences with people who are really cool, interesting, fun. And, you know, a lot of people, when they hear this, they go, ooh, my God, isn't that dangerous? Well, let me just tell you.
That's not what I think at all.
Well, a lot of people do. And I just want to tell you, folks, think about this. If you go on to Netflix, look at the Ted Bundy tapes. Ted Bundy never rode a bicycle, okay? I'm just telling you. The people that you get out there riding bicycles, they're fun, they're interesting, they're engaging.
Do you make meals for them?
Absolutely I do.
Did they make meals for you when you were on the road?
Both. Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, Ginny Sullivan sitting right here cooked for me when I was in Missoula. And, you know, I had no idea who she was. I had, you know, no idea that she was an adventure cycling bigwig and honcho. I contacted Ginny and her husband, and they were like, yeah, sure, stay. And I did for a couple of nights.
Did you have most of that planned well in advance?
No.
Or you're doing it almost like day of?
On the fly.
That would make me a little nervous.
Yeah, well, that's why I have my tent. You know, so because if sometimes you want to try to, you know, stay with a host, but
sure,
you can't, and
sure,
that's when you tent. Generally speaking, it's bad form to do it at the last minute, but, you know, stuff happens, and sometimes there's, you know.
So as much lead time as possible.
And typically what I ask for from people who stay with us is, you know, a 2 to 3 day lead time so that we can get our schedule sort of figured out and that kind of thing. And most people are able to do that because you can generally predict how far you're going to ride per day. I mean, most of us are riding, you know, 60 to 80 miles a day, and you can sort of figure out, you know, okay, that's going to get me from Buffalo to Rochester,
sure,
to, you know, that kind of thing. And yeah, but it's a very active network, and it is just one other way that riders can do two things that are important to riders. One, save money. Two, make interpersonal connections that are meaningful with people that share similar interests. And, you know, there are two different types of tours, at least in my mind. There are the tours that are about the giant big scenery. And if you remember the tour that I took last year and that I posted about, I went right down the spine of the Canadian Rockies, you know, Banff, Lake Louise, Glacier, down to Missoula, the biggest mountainous country in North America, and it was spectacular. It was less about the people. This trip through the Panhandle in the Deep South was all about the people, because guess what? You get kind of bored looking at pine forests after a while, but the people are endlessly entertaining.
I don't know that I would get bored looking at pine forests, especially in the winter, you know, when it's, you know, cold as it is up here. We're talking about cycling. I'm going to take a phone call in just a second. In our second half hour, we're going to hear from all three of our guests about some of their most memorable stories on this and how to construct this, because Chris has obviously done this. So when he wants to go solo through the South, most people aren't going to start with a 21-day solo trip,
no.
But that's okay. Also, Chris does this insufferable thing on Facebook where he'll post this amazing story, and then he'll get to, like, the denouement, and then he'll say, and I'll tell you more tomorrow if you're interested. Nobody ever is like, no, I'm good. I mean, like, that's insufferable, and you must stop that. It's a bad practice, because everybody wants to know. So tell me the most memorable moment on the 21-day trip through the South that you took.
It was about people. So rolling into Mobile, and I had a host lined up. And the reason I had to go to Mobile was that there was an airport there. And I had a business meeting I actually had to go to in Chicago. So I needed to fly out of Mobile. So I roll into Mobile. Right as I'm rolling into Mobile, my host says, sorry, you know, my wife is maxed out on guests. You can't stay with us. Okay, that happens. No big deal. Contacted another fellow. And he said, yeah, sure, no problem. Just so you know, there's an indie folk band that's also staying at my house. And so if you're okay staying with them and my wife and my two little kids, love to have you. Well, Evan, I got to tell you, I rolled in there and it was like I met the brother that I had never had. And his two little kids and his wife couldn't have been more open and friendly. And the indie band, well, they were just unbelievable. So that night in Mobile, we all end up going to a brew pub, kind of like Three Heads here in town, watch this indie folk band just blow the doors off the place with, you know, hundreds of Mobilians, you know, just rocking out and having a great time. We came back the next morning, all right, you know, came back to the house that night, everybody sleeps in, go to church the next day. Now, church in Mobile, Alabama is a different activity than it is here in the Northeast, you know, for Episcopalians like me, okay? And it was a, you know, like a full gospel event. And the crazy thing was that the host said to me, Rochester, isn't that the home of garbage plates? I was like, I just looked at the guy like, you got to be kidding me. How do you know that? He said, well, four of the people who attend our parish and that you'll meet in a few minutes are from Rochester. And doesn't it turn out that two are from Greece, and three were from Greece and one was from Farmington. And, you know, and we end up having this, you know, Rochester, you know, convention there at services. And then we all came back to the home where the indie rock band said, or the indie folk band said, we're doing a concert right here and right now. They pulled all their instruments out and did an acoustic set in the backyard, and you know, everybody from the church had come back to these people's house, and it was just this big, rollicking, fun as could be party in the backyard, and all because of this Warm Showers network and bicycling and openness and hospitality. And actually, folks, if you go to my, if you want to see it, I put a clip of, you know, one of the songs on the webpage.
Amazing.
And it was just a riot. It just, you know, it was just such a great connection. And, you know, I've actually stayed in touch with them as I continued on. I sent the little kids postcards from different places as I went, and you know, have been in communication since.
I had just got a note from a listener out of state listening from Ohio who has taken on an annual basis, he says, these trips around the United States and Canada for all the month of July. And so, and then tries to spend New Year's Eve, he says, every year in a different country. And he loves the idea of getting on the road and meeting people. And he, first of all, he says, this sounds freaking awesome. And second of all, this idea that Chris is talking about, the way people open up their houses with warm showers, whether it's Jenny or Steve or others that you meet all around the country or really all around the world, we have this weird suspicion of fellow people. Mm-hmm. And I worked in commercial television news. I know what leads our newscasts every night. People are really scared of people. It's amazing how open and welcoming people are.
It's
fabulous.
It's just incredible.
Just fabulous. So before I grab Adam's call, so Adam, hang there for one more second, just to kind of give us a snapshot. Your average day, you wake up in the morning. Are you on the road pretty quick after coffee or breakfast? Or what's an average day on this trip for you?
So I'd get up. You know, the sun was rising late, and so, you know, I never want to ride in the dark. So I would get on the road about 7:30, and I would stop riding normally at about 5:30, something like that. And that would give me time to either, you know, roll into a host's home and kind
of. You're stopping for lunch.
Oh, yeah.
Stretch legs.
Yeah.
You're not riding straight through.
No. You can't. And it's no fun to ride all day. You know, you want to get out and stretch and, you know, see different things, read history placards, talk to people. You know, so I started the trip at about 60 miles a day. I ended the trip at 105 miles a day. But, you know, that's just me. You know, there are plenty of people who have an absolute blast on trips with not a single bag on their bike, riding 20 miles and having a roof over their head.
Sure.
and a great bottle of wine and a really great bed. And there's nothing wrong with that.
What kind of bag did you carry? Just one?
You have what are called panniers. That's the French word for a bag over the back of your bike, your rear wheels and front wheels.
Okay. Adam in Walworth wants to jump into the conversation. Go ahead, Adam.
Well, am I the first guy that called to weigh in on the bike conversation? That's okay. You know, that's cool. I was going to say that when I first got my first real job, like I'll call it, 17 years ago or whatever, the first thing I bought was a brand new Fender Stratocaster and a bike. The second thing was a bike. And I have that bike still, and I've ridden it on the Erie Canal for day trips. I've ridden it in the Victor Bike Park, which is amazing if you're a mountain biker. But I'd also like to say that we were talking the other day about what keeps people in New York, and we got the Erie Canal, and the chance to take a day trip from town to town on a bike is just a great way to spend a day, especially in the summertime or fall time. I just wanted to say that I have a lot of experiences like the other guys have been sharing, but the big point is that we used to use bikes for transportation as well as recreation. And towns and cities that enhance biking are just that much more enjoyable, and everybody can enjoy it. You don't have to have a big money bike. And I love hearing your guys' stories, but just wanted to say, I'm a bike enthusiast.
There you go.
Great show.
Thank you, Adam.
No politics today. No politics.
There you
today.
Go. There you go. Adam said that the bike is one of the most important possessions you can have. And the only thing that I will say about politics is we get ready to go to break and we're going to come back and get you all set for tonight. We're going to hear Steve's stories and how he got hooked up with this and some of his favorite adventures from the road. The only thing I'm going to say about politics is this, and this is going to sound really sort of Pollyanna, and I get it. Everyone sort of is feeling pretty polarized. The more time you spend in the more places, the more you feel like we can find a way forward in this world. That's my view.
Connections.
Hey, I think there's a show called that.
Oh, I do not seek to minimize any of the feelings people have in the polarization. I'm not saying it's not legitimate. I'm saying I do think we have bubbled up a little bit, bubbled off, kind of walled off.
And do you have to go to a break right now?
Well, I can break whenever I want. It's okay. My show, man.
Awesome.
So, go ahead.
This reminds me of a funny little moment that happened.
Yeah,
so
go ahead.
I'm riding into Bugaloosa. That's how you say it, Bugaloosa, Alabama, Louisiana. And I stopped at a little joint to get some lunch. And, of course, you always go to the place where all the pickups are because that's where the good food is. I pulled in. And, I'm the only guy in spandex for miles. And somebody that I would call, you know, a good old boy came up to me and he said, "So what you doing, son?" And he started talking to me. And people just you're completely non-threatening when you're on a bicycle.
Exactly.
You know, it's a completely different experience than if you're on a motorcycle or a car. And people want to find out, who's this weird person coming through our town? And they want to talk and they want to be connected to you. And so this guy and I were just chit-chatting about, you know, what I was doing and where I was going. And he finally said, so where are you from? And he was probably about 75, maybe pushing 80. I said, "I'm from Rochester, New York." He just looked at me and said, "Welcome to America, son." So we just both laughed. That's to your point. You know, here I am, a guy from the north who he could probably figure was, you know, a little left of center. He was a guy from Bogalusa, Louisiana, who, based on his bumper stickers, I could figure was a little bit to the right of center, and we could have a good laugh about our differences and have some fun.
Chris Thomas is here, obviously a cycling enthusiast and a partner with Nixon Peabody, who is not employed by but just a big fan of adventure cycling. And Jenny Sullivan is here all the way from Montana, the director of travel initiatives for adventure cycling, because she's in town for a Rochester event tonight. It's happening at Full Moon Vista from 7 to 9. You can learn all about what adventure cycling is and what this company and organization does, what's available. If you want to learn about it, you want to get outside and want to check it out. So we'll talk more about that on the other side of the break, and we're going to ask Steve Powell, tour leader for adventure cycling, to tell us about some of his favorite experiences and stories. Really, I think some days we need a little break like this. We need to think about the world in a different way, and we appreciate that. Let's take that break and come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, an organization called Genesee River Watch has released its first ever Genesee River report card, and the river only got a C. The report measured the water quality, the usability of the river, and its major tributaries. There were even some D's on that report card. We'll sit down with members of the Genesee River Watch to discuss the state of the river, environmental challenges, and more Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Caleb in Pittsford's got a question for our guest. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi. Are you still there? I'm having trouble with my phone.
We're here, and I hope you're not riding a bicycle. Do not bicycle and call Connections.
I'm not riding a bicycle, but I'm going to pull over because now that I got off of hands-free, now I'm being illegal, but now I'm legal. Okay. I wanted to know about international. Like, you must do some international trips.
We do not do international trips, but we can certainly connect you with great people that do either provide international trips from here in the United States for tours or for, different routes that you may want to do on your own. So you can just contact us and we'll be happy to help connect you to the right people in Europe or wherever you want to go.
And we do have
that sounds great.
We do have a monthly magazine. And the monthly magazine often features overseas international bike trips that are pretty inspiring. It's called Adventure Cyclist, and you can go to our website and pick up
Learn
a sample copy.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Caleb.
It sounds really great. And then if you have a minute, just if I can tell you about a really, really magical trip that I took to Brazil with a buddy. He had dreamed for many years. He lived there 30 years ago of doing a cycling trip from Diamantina, which is in the middle of Brazil, to the coast on the Estrada Real, which is the royal road that they transported diamond and gold from in the 1600s. And so I went with him on this trip, and it just was the most beautiful, amazing thing that I've done. So I thank you guys for having this program to remind me to get out and ride again. And when you talk about favorite days, we had gone, and we just did about 200 miles of it, and I probably did half of it. I was not in as good shape, and there was two of us who were, and we rode in a support vehicle with this buddy, host brother from 30 years ago when he did an exchange program. And we rode with his host brother, who had his friend, who was a sommelier, and they brought this incredible wine, and we didn't have glasses to drink it out of, and we're drinking it out of plastic water bottles, looking at scenery that just makes your jaw drop to the floor. And then after 3 days of this, and the third day was the most grueling day, and the second night we had stayed in a B&B that was kind of dingy and didn't smell great, but we get to the last one, and it's just the most beautiful place, like the Grand Canyon of Brazil, that you've ever been. And we go into the middle of this little square after we've all gotten cleaned up, and people are grilling food. They do that all over Brazil, and they're offering us their meat. And then, and so we're eating like what they've grilled with them. And then, like this little teeny bar that's about 100 square feet, everybody starts showing up there, and they want to see the foreigners. And we're sitting there and we're drinking with them and singing old folk songs all through the night. And the proprietor, who's a weathered guy who's about 80, gives a speech about us bringing joy to his town. Mm-hmm. And then my buddy who lives there gives a speech also. And it just was magical. So thank you for having this program and reminding us to go out and enjoy life, you know?
Caleb, thank you very much. Yeah, go
Caleb,
ahead.
Caleb, can you tell me how long ago was that trip?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
we
you
lost
brought
Caleb. Yeah,
him.
Yeah.
I think he said you know, 30 years ago is what he said.
You see, this is the amazing thing about bike travel. If that trip was 30 years ago and he remembers that
viscerally.
Trip with that much clarity and detail, that is what makes this kind of travel, along with the people. And I mean, it's the experience is literally just part of your heart and soul.
So give me a quick hitting list, cities or routes that you're going to do this year. And doesn't have to be in all. Doesn't have to be all of them, but just give me a short list.
Well, I'm bike touring the Donegal Peninsula in Ireland in June with my husband, before a conference that I'm going to for adventure cycling.
And then adventure cycling is going to be leading trips where else?
Oh, man, we've got – I'll let Steve answer that.
Yeah, we have over 117 different tours throughout the U.S., and in about a week or so, I'll be out in California, the Sacramento area. We're doing a multimodal trip. We bike 30 miles a day. We take a couple of ferries and a couple of trains. We work our way down to San Francisco, San Jose, combination of – trails, roads. It's a full experience on a bike. And then I head out to the Big Island of Hawaii, and we do a two-week camping trip. We make a loop around the Big Island of Hawaii and camp on beaches.
This is your job?
It is, and I'm honored, and it's a real privilege to do this for Adventure Cycling. Now, that's just half of my job. I'm the other half. I actually I'm from Ithaca. I work for Cornell during the day and do this sort of thing on vacations.
Gig. Yeah, it's a pretty good gig. It's a really good gig. Before we kind of get more on sort of Steve's history and maybe some of his favorite memories from the road, Jackie from Woman Tours is on the line with us. Go ahead, Jackie.
You know, I was just going to mention Woman
yeah.
Tours
yeah.
as a matter of fact.
Well, it was ringing in her ears here.
I literally have the website up right here because I wanted to tell people about Woman Tours locally.
Now,
okay,
Jackie,
go ahead.
Yeah, Jackie.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to everybody about cycling. You can never talk enough about it. But I just wanted to make sure everybody did know that we do have a locally owned company right here in Rochester, and we do trips all around the world, but we're a little bit different in that we do just for women only. And unlike adventure cycling, there isn't much camping on our trips. We're all in hotels, but we do them all over. We use adventure cycling maps too. I cannot speak highly enough about them. We're always looking for new routes, new places to go, and I check out all the places that they're mapping out for us. It shows us all the best places to go, which has been great. But I can't talk or listen enough about it. Touring by bike, there's no better way.
Hey, Jackie, where can people find more about what you're doing?
On our website, womantours.com, and it's WOMAN, which is always confusing for people. But and it's just for women. We get women of all ages, all abilities. But men always say, can I just put on a wig? And I just tell them no.
Jackie, thank you for taking the time to call. So there's lots of different, as I said at the outset, you know, adventure cycling is just one of the options that you have if you're interested in this. Yellow House Bicycles writes to us that says, have them tell you about S240 sub 24 hour overnights or S24
yeah.
240s. What do
we
you call them?
We call them bike bike weekends or bike travel weekends, because that was actually an article. The sub 24-hour was an article in our magazine, and it inspired us to create a whole program around it, because it was a gentleman, Grant Peterson, who would go out and do these rides from basically his office out behind his community, camp overnight, bring a burrito with him, and then come back in the next day in time for coffee and work. And that inspired us to start a website called bikeovernights.org, or .org, I think, yes. And now we're actually offering events on that same model, and we have something called Bike Travel Weekend. It is the first weekend of June every year, and I'm going to turn it over to Steve to tell you about Bike Travel Weekend.
Right. This is we empower individuals, groups of cyclists to do their own thing on this first weekend in June, but to list their ideas for a short overnight tour on this website, biketravelweekend.org. And we've done this for a few years in a row. We get about 10,000 cyclists all throughout the U.S. and now even in 20 different countries. There's a little map. It doesn't cost anything to register your tour, inspire other people to maybe join you or become inspired by other people's short tours.
So biketravelweekend.org?
That's mm-hmm. it. Yep.
All right. I'm actually looking it up as we speak here, because in yeah. terms of my own vacation planning... Yeah,
there's people that have done the Erie Canal, so we have this whole gamut of different itineraries that people have developed for this little website, so you can go in and search it, find something that fits you, fits where idea. You might be traveling. Say you're going to visit a family member, you need to get out of that place for a little while, maybe, you know, for a night while everybody's visiting. Maybe you're doing a family reunion, something, you know, and then you can get out and do one of these weekend rides, just an overnight or maybe two overnights.
And low cost or virtually no cost even, so you can sort of dabble in this and see what it's like.
That's a great idea.
You know, one of the things I really love about adventure cycling is that it's a not-for-profit organization. And so, you know, I just want to make clear to listeners that, you know, we're not pitching anything where, you know, people are, you know, rolling in the cash. This is a not-for-profit organization that's an advocacy group for cycling writ large across the nation, mm-hmm. and bike touring on a smaller level. And that, you know, it's great that, you know, Jackie called up from Woman Tours to sort of tell you folks that even the for-profit community loves what adventure cycling is doing. And to, you know, really encourage people to, you know, get out there and do something that is at your level, something that you're comfortable with, and to know that there's a huge community out there that wants to hold your hand and bring you along with what you're comfortable with.
Well, I've asked for Chris's favorite story. Steve, what's your favorite story from the road?
Well, it took place not too far from here, right on the Erie Canal Trail, during a torrential downpour. I think it was a record-setting 4 inches of rain within a 24-hour period. And right in the middle of that, I had a flat tire on the canal trail. And even though
this sounds great.
Even though I'm an experienced bike traveler, okay, and carry spare parts and all this, I had the wrong size tube with me. Hmm. So another cyclist, because this is a well-known route, another cyclist came up, helped me out, provided me with that tube that I needed. Make a long story short, we became great friends. Turned out he was from Sacramento, California. And that bike tour in California that I talked about in a week or two, well, I'm going to go visit him as part of that tour.
Oh, wow.
And he's going to invite us to spend an evening with him. So you just never know when those bonds of friendship are going to form during these experiences.
Oh, what a great mm-hmm. story. All right, Jenny, you got to pick one. What's your favorite story from the road?
I guess I'll kind of play on the story that Chris had down south. My husband and I were doing our Transamerica bicycle trail from Missoula to Florence, Oregon, and we were out in eastern Oregon. We had just kind of left a really rural community, and we were biking up this hill, and it was 100 degrees, 105 degrees. I mean, it was super hot. What fool rides in the middle of August? But we were, that's when we were doing it. And Tom was way, way ahead of me because he's a much stronger cyclist. And he was waiting for me on this pullout on this climb. And it kind of plateaued a little bit, and there was a pullout on the other side. And this big, huge pickup truck, well, first there was a big, I'd been passed by closely by several vehicles, even though there was a wide shoulder. It still just never, you never completely shake that off. And so I looked up, and there was this huge pickup truck, and it pulled over across the street from road where Tom was. And I caught up to Tom, and we were like, oh, and this gal jumped out and ran over with two ice cold water bottles. And it was just the most, because, you know, I had in my mind, what is this, what's going on here? You know, we're out in the middle of nowhere. And just the wonderful nature and hearts of people in rural America, it's just really, I think, just constantly surprises you. And you know, one of my favorite stories that I go and talk to people about is our work to help make rural communities thrive, and how adventure cyclists have that ability, because we're going to places that regular motorized tourists don't necessarily go to. The little Baker City, Oregons of the world, and Mitchell, Oregons, and Bugsalusa, Louisiana.
Bugaloosa.
These are places that, you know, car travelers are probably not going to go to. And these little communities really benefit by these cyclists buying their lunches and maybe their second breakfasts in these communities. And we have a little town in Montana called Ovando, and it's a town of 65 people. And they have a fly shop and a cafe and a Trixie's bar and a little hotel with four rooms in it. They have lived essentially and thrived over the hunting and fishing community there that comes to visit there. However, it's on the Great Divide mountain bike route, and it's on the Lewis and Clark route. So we also do bike packing routes, and the most well-known follows the Continental Divide. It's called the Great Divide mountain bike route. And so they decided, how can we kind of harvest this tourism population? So they were like, well, if we can get people to spend the night here, then we know that they'll eat in our cafe and they'll buy food in our little store. And so they thought, well, what can we do to do this? We've got the hotel, but we know there's a certain sector of the community that doesn't want to spend the money. So they took their little grassy area in the middle of town, and they put up a teepee. And they got a shepherd's wagon and put a couple cots in that. And then they renovated their little town jail, which is just a little one-bedroom log unit in their across the street. And they built a bike camp, and they put in a horseshoe pit. And they get over 1,000 cyclists a summer coming into their town with a population of 65. And they say now, today, that the cycling community has more economic impact on their community than hunting and fishing. And they recently won the State Tourism Award.
Where is that again?
Ovando, Montana.
What a great story there. Before we lose the hour, I want to mention a couple of things. So there's a lot going on with bicycling, not just adventure cycling. Of course, the MVP Healthcare Rochester Twilight Criterium is back on Saturday, May 11th. And that's fun to just check out. You got people coming all the way from Australia and Hong Kong to do that. It's Rochester CRIT, Rochester Crite, the Criterium. The Criterium. RochesterCrit.com. And the Erie Canalway National Heritage Corridor has a new initiative underway, the Canalway Challenge, a program to try and inspire people of all ages and abilities to achieve their own personal fitness goals while checking out the Canal Corridor. That means walking, running, cycling, and paddling. You just got to sign up. ErieCanalway.org to find the challenge there. Also want to tell you that next week, my colleague Brett Dahlberg, our colleague Brett has been not only an avid bicyclist since he moved to Rochester, but he bikes to work a lot, and he records a lot of video of how people are interacting. Sometimes not so well, drivers. So Brett's piece on bike lanes in Rochester next week is one you do not want to miss. How are we doing across the country? I know you do some advocacy work to make it for a more bike-friendly country. How are we doing?
Not so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we work on a number of initiatives to make it safer and more accessible for people to tour by bicycle. One of them is working with Amtrak. And we have an advocate here, right here in Rochester, that is on our Amtrak Bicycle Task Force. We also are very concerned about the safety of cyclists. And so we're working on rumble strip implementation, as well as distracted driving, kind of jumping into that automated vehicle arena, making sure that our AV work can sense cyclists, because unlike pedestrians, we move a bit faster and we're a little harder to sense. So how are we going to make sure in the next generation of vehicles that we're not even endangering cyclists even more? So we've got a lot of work to do in the safety arena. We can't do it by ourselves. So we partner with a lot of other national organizations as well as state and local organizations to make sure that those things happen.
Chris, 30 seconds. How's Rochester doing on bike safety?
So-so. We're certainly not, you know, a Madison or a Minneapolis, but, you know, by the same token, we're not Bogalusa, Louisiana. The routes that I take to and from work are easy riding: Park Avenue, East Avenue, nice, at least on East, a nice wide shoulder. I would say that overall, in my experience, the drivers around here are really actually very, very good. Are there accidents that occur? Yes. Are there deaths that occur on the roads? Yes. But that's typically at nighttime when, you know, people shouldn't be out riding bikes anyways.
Well, I hope, listeners, you've had a chance to hear a lot of ideas and some great stories. And if you want to learn more tonight, it's at Full Moon Vista. Where is that?
It's on University Avenue across from the Price Right and... what's that fancy restaurant?
The Revelry.
Revelry. I knew that
and
you would
right
know that.
And it's right near Living Roots, which is the new city winery there.
Yeah.
So Full Moon Vista, 7 to 9 tonight. They'll have refreshments, and they'll be talking about adventure cycling. You can meet Ginny there. Thank you for being here.
Come meet me.
Thank you for being here, for sharing these stories.
Thank you.
And Chris, thank you so much for pushing us on this. Great idea.
Yeah, sure.
Great conversation.
Yeah, always fun.
Steve, have a great time in Sacramento and California and parts west, and thanks for sharing your expertise.
My pleasure.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.